Welcome back to Midpoint, friends. I'm your host, Shelley Reback, and we have a really interesting show for you today. Do you think your electric bills are too high? Do you resent having some of the highest electricity costs and the highest energy company corporate profits in the nation? Some of our local communities are ready to take action to address these problems. We are going to be discussing how the city of Clearwater is exploring the possibility of forming a municipal electric utility and dumping their current provider, Duke Energy Company. The city of St. Petersburg may be considering the same thing. We'll hear all about this after our Florida Focus News Nuggets, so you don't miss anything important in Florida news. The most important story in Florida politics last week was the convening of a grand jury as part of a criminal investigation into the Hope Florida Foundation. That's the Casey DeSantis-linked nonprofit that the governor's staff used last fall to funnel some $10 million from a legal settlement with Centene, a Medicaid contractor, into dark money groups that were helping to fund the advertising campaigns against Amendment 3, the marijuana ballot measure, and the Amendment 4, abortion amendment. The Tampa Bay Times and Miami Herald reported last week that some of the important players in the Hope Florida scandal appeared at the grand jury convened by the state prosecutor in Tallahassee to determine whether there is probable cause to charge anybody with any crimes arising from the diversion of taxpayer funds into a political campaign. But that $10 million in Hope Florida taxpayer funds is not the only diversion of your tax dollars used by DeSantis to influence the election last year. A long-running investigation by Jason Garcia of Seeking Rents estimates that between five state agencies and two charities also funded by the state, one of which is the Hope Florida Foundation, Ron DeSantis actually spent between $35 million and $40 million in taxpayer funds on commercials intended to weaken support for Amendment 3, the recreational marijuana amendment, and Amendment 4, which would have protected the state right to abortion. The obfuscation of the state's diversions and payments for advertising against these two citizen amendments is really appalling. According to Jason Garcia of the Substack Seeking Rents, payment records show four state agencies, ACA, the Administration for Healthcare, the Department of Children and Families, the Department of Education, and the Department of Health all collectively spent about $16.9 million on those anti-amendment ad deals. That's on top of the Hope Florida money. The records obtained by Seeking Rents show numerous state health care programs were hijacked by DeSantis to pay for his ads against the abortion and marijuana amendments. For example, records obtained last year by Seeking Rents show that the Florida Department of Children and Families funded much of its anti-amendment advertising using proceeds from Florida's share of a nationwide legal settlement with manufacturers and distributors of opioids. That's money the states are supposed to spend combating opioid addiction. They also apparently diverted money from state-funded pregnancy centers to anti-abortion amendment ad buys through the Florida Pregnancy Care Centers, a taxpayer-funded anti-abortion organization. That's all on top of the $10 million in funding from the Hope Florida Foundation diversion of Medicaid funds. But that's not all. The DeSantis administration also paid at least $370,000 in legal bills related to its public campaigning against the two ballot measures. The governor and his staff enlisted at least four law firms in that portion of the campaign, which included not just defending the state-sponsored ads, but also threatening television stations into taking down commercials sponsored by the group behind the abortion rights measure. One of the firms billed Florida taxpayers $750 an hour. The millions of dollars of taxpayer money that Ron DeSantis spent attacking the abortion and marijuana amendments was also on top of millions more contributed by private DeSantis donors who got public favors from the governor. It looks like the Hope Florida scheme was also just one part of a much larger plot that Ron DeSantis and his top advisors orchestrated last fall against the voters and the taxpayers of Florida. And the Florida Phoenix reports that Florida is the second most financially distressed state in the union in terms of its residents' debt obligations. The state saw a 23% increase in the share of people with distressed bank accounts between 2024 and 2025, the data shows. In addition, a significant swath of Floridians are feeling considerable pain, caught in working homelessness, trying to cope with the affordable housing crisis, stagnant wages, medical debt, and student loan and credit card debt. Meanwhile, wages and salaries fall far short of supporting families. Economic data shows that Florida's economy ostensibly is strong, with a GDP of $1.76 trillion after years of explosive expansion. However, that wealth is not trickling down. A Florida Realtors report notes that as of mid-2025, a family of four in Florida needs an annual income of $217,651 to live comfortably, including savings and discretionary spending. This is significantly higher than the state's median income, and more economic danger lies ahead. One of the prime complaints about the cost of living in Florida has been the increasing cost of electricity. Power bills have been rising, primarily due to large pending rate increases from major utilities like Florida Power and Light and Tampa Electric. These increases are expected to be substantial, with Florida Power and Light's proposed hike being the largest in United States history. Duke Energy customers have been hit with temporary storm cost recovery charges from the 2024 hurricane season and approved base rate hikes for grid improvements. Although Duke claims that their bills will significantly decrease in March 2026 when the storm recovery charges drop off, Florida still has some of the highest electric utility costs in the nation. In the city of Clearwater, their 30-year franchise agreement with Duke Energy is ending on December 31, 2025, and it is up for renewal. That's the contract between the city and Duke that allows Duke to be the sole provider of electricity to the city's customers and allows Duke to utilize city rights of way and easements within the city. Before the city just signs a new contract with Duke, Clearwater wants to know, is there a better, cheaper way to provide electricity to city residents? To that end, they've invested in a feasibility study to examine the costs and benefits of dumping Duke altogether and forming their own municipal electric utility owned and funded by the city. At the end of last month, consultants New Gen Strategies presented the results of that study to the city and concluded that the Clearwater Municipal Electric Utility would have a lower effective all-in rate for consumers, even after purchasing from Duke everything they need to provide electricity to the city. Duke, however, disagrees and has said that they're not interested in selling their infrastructure to the city. The city would have to take it by eminent domain, and that would involve a long, expensive legal battle. Nevertheless, this is a concept that is gaining a lot of support from consumers in Clearwater and elsewhere, including the city of St. Petersburg. So we decided we needed to know more about this, the pros, the cons, the obstacles, and the advantages. We invited consultants from NewGen, the company that prepared the feasibility study, to join us, but they referred us to their presentation at Clearwater City Council and suggested we speak with people from that city government. So we invited members of the City of Clearwater Administration to join us today, too. But, oddly, everyone we asked had scheduling conflicts. We didn't invite people from Duke because I felt that Duke has its own massive communications division that they could use to spread their message whenever they want. So our guests today on this topic are Brian Beckman, chair of the Sierra Club Suncoast Executive Committee, who's been following this issue and, has some things to say about this proposal. So welcome, Brian.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And Richie Floyd is also with us. He's a city council representative for District 8 in the city of St. Petersburg and a fervent activist and member of the Democratic Socialists of America who has been pushing the Dump Duke proposal in the city of St. Petersburg. So happy to have you, Richie.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks so much.
And Susan Glickman is also with us. Susan is now Vice President for Policy and Partnerships for the CLIO Institute, an organization dedicated to climate education, advocacy, and engagement. Glad to have you with us, Susan.
Nice to see you, Shelley.
For an overview of the issue, here's some audio from a brief TV news report by ABC's Tampa Bay 28 from October 2nd, following the Clearwater City Council meeting of September 29th, at which the council heard from their consultants, New Gen Strategies, about the feasibility of the city ending their relationship with Duke and forming a municipal electric utility. So, Jessica, let's play that clip.
In Clearwater, a push to lower power bills has city leaders considering a bold idea. They might dump Duke Energy in favor of creating a publicly owned utility. The path Clearwater might take was actually taken years ago by another Florida city. Our Chad Mills found out what lessons Clearwater can learn from Winter Park.
Winter Park's current city manager was front and center during their transition. He tells me it was no cakewalk, but 20 years later, he has no regrets.
A growing frustration in Clearwater. Some customers say they're tired of paying expensive Duke Energy power bills.
I mean, it's been dramatic. When I look back at our power bills from like a few years ago, 5 years ago, it was around $150 generally, and right now we're at like $320 a month.
Looking to lower those rates and put more power lines underground, Clearwater leaders might dump Duke and create a public-owned and run power company.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Unanimous.
In a meeting Monday night, another Florida city's name came up a lot.
We mirrored our analysis based on what Winter Park is doing right now.
That issue was litigated by the city of Winter Park.
If we look at Winter Park.
Winter Park, just north of Orlando, was used as an example that a city like Clearwater can divorce an investor-owned utility in favor of creating one owned by the public.
I was the assistant city manager at the time.
Randy Knight headed up Winter Park's power shift. He said customers there were fed up with their big electric provider, Florida Power Corp, because of reliability issues.
It was somewhat legendary in Winter Park of how many outages and how long the outages were.
The fight to make the switch was long, tough, and expensive, but it finally happened in 2005, and Randy says it proved skeptics wrong.
We had been extremely satisfied.
Rates eventually went down, and 20 years later, 81% of Winter Park's lines are now underground.
We'll have our first speaker.
Back in Clearwater,
we're going down a billion-dollar path.
A fight is already brewing against a public takeover. Duke Energy says its property is not for sale.
All right. So Winter Park dumped their investor-owned utility 20 years ago. And now Winter Park's own municipal electric utility charges about 40% less for power and has undergrounded over 80% of their lines, leading to vastly improved reliance and resilience. Okay, so NewGen, the Clearwater consultant, says the cost to the consumer for their electricity would also be cheaper with a municipal utility. A little less in the beginning, and like Winter Park, progressively less over a 20-year time frame. The cost of electricity is the prime mover in the push to form a municipal utility, but it's not the only issue that motivates support for dumping Duke, right? So let me begin with you, Brian Beckman from the Sierra Club. What is the position of the Sierra Club and environmentalists generally on the formation of a municipal utility, and why do you support it?
So we've been looking at this for a while now, knowing that these franchise agreements were coming up, and we've engaged people like Susan, for instance, over time. And so we're very much in favor of starting with this investigation or an analysis that NewGen did, and hopefully St. Petersburg would do. We are 100% in favor of breaking away from the current model that Duke has monopoly control of us.
Yeah, but why?
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 From a money standpoint, it's rates. It's rates. We're also very interested in the makeup of the power generation and how much pollution's resulting from that. So we're very interested in changing that dynamic to lower emissions. And cities like Clearwater, cities like St. Pete have goals for reducing their emissions over time. And so that's another key driver that we've paid attention to.
Okay, so Susan Glickman from the Clio Institute, you've been an advocate and a lobbyist pressing utilities to address climate change for many years. And how would a municipal utility be better at addressing climate change than a corporate utility, or would it?
Well, it really depends, but if you have a municipal utility, the idea is you're taking the profit out of the equation. So 75% of Florida is covered by investor-owned utilities, and in the 1950s, where these franchise agreements were set up, it made sense because the aim was universal service. Now, in 2025, the cost of solar is down 90%. Battery storage is coming down. So the opportunities are different than they were when the system first got set up. So if you take the profit out of the equation, and the idea of a municipal utility is that it then benefits the community, right? So Florida sends $75 billion a year out of state each and every year to bring in large fossil fuels from other places. So if you keep those energy dollars here at home, it helps the economy. We can also help people be more efficient. Every 5 years, Florida utilities, including the two larger municipal utilities in Jacksonville and Orlando, set conservation goals. Out of 53 utilities, Florida Power and Light is 52 out of 53 in offering efficiency. Tampa Electric is 40 and Duke is 48. Mm-hmm. So just the easy, inexpensive things. And we have to look at the Florida legislature, which keeps this system in place. They do not push the utilities to help people have conservation and efficiency programs. They eliminate the inexpensive, cheap measures before that process gets started.
It's getting worse out of the Florida legislature. I mean, it's beyond the silliness of not being able to use the words climate change.
Correct.
They also take measures to basically restrict home rule over some of these climate goals that different municipalities have to reduce their footprint, right?
That's right. So in St. Petersburg, where they adopted a 100% clean energy goal, when Duke Energy's fuel mix is 90% largely fossil gas, methane gas, they also have some coal still, you can't meet those goals. So in addition to the cost issue, there's also, the environmental, pollution side of things. So if you want to, change to clean energy, and remember, Florida Power and Light's parent company and one of Duke's subsidiaries own a pipeline along with Spectre Energy. And when
let me stop you on that point, because the plan, as I understand it from the NewGen report and the city meeting, was that the city would purchase from Duke the infrastructure necessary to generate electricity for the city, and then they would own the utility. So
not the generation side.
Yeah, they're not planning to generate in Clearwater. They would buy power, which again is easier in this environment that we live in 2025 than it would have been in the 1950s.
Well, but they can only buy power from what's available.
Correct.
And how it's available.
Well, in part, I was talking to Susan about this earlier, so this gets back to the way things looked back in the 1950s and the way the things look now. Different communities across the country, states, are doing things like virtual power plants, and Duke is not doing that here. And our regulation that's there at the state level prevents those things from happening. When you are a municipal utility, or if you break away from monopolies, then you can do these things that are much readily available with battery technology, other technology that allows you to use the power that's out there in the community that's sitting in cars right now, all these different alternatives that are not being utilized today that bring down costs.
Okay, so they're not bound to whatever Duke was doing to generate power. Is that
once that's you correct. Become immune, yeah.
Yeah, once you become immune. Okay, so let me get to Richie Floyd, city council member for District 8 in St. Pete. So why do you support forming a municipal electric utility in St. Pete?
Yeah, I think this is quite simple, actually. It's been 30 years that we've been tied to Duke Energy in the city of St. Petersburg, and this is basically like a once-in-a-generation opportunity to reassess if that relationship is working for us. And we've already talked about the cost increases over the past 30 years, but I think the biggest thing from my perspective outside of cost is also just control and accountability. And so do you want a fundamental service that you need to live your life, energy? Do you want that service to be controlled by someone who's profiting off of it, by someone who's taking profits and shipping them to shareholders and out-of-state corporations? Or do you want it controlled by your local government, who may not be perfect, but is elected every 2 years by you, so you can have a say in who's involved in that local government, who's accountable to you, who you can go to City Hall and voice your complaints. And I think that's a big reason why we want to pursue this path, is so that we can show people that there's an opportunity for something that's so important to them, their energy, to be controlled locally instead of by a private corporation.
And if I could add to that, you know, in addition to being controlled by a private corporation, you started to mention this earlier, it's being controlled by the state as well. Those two are married together in that model that we currently have. It's our state legislature and our governor and
the Florida Public Service Commission.
Exactly. They control all that stuff. Yeah. We are not in control of it. So very much to Richie's point, we need to get control of that here locally.
I don't know whether or not a municipal electric utility would be immune from the actions of the legislature, though. For example, in restricting home rule over certain aspects.
It's a great point, and this is why you have to have the right people elected state level. Because I worry about preemption of even this topic that we're talking about here, of it coming back and, no, you can't form a municipal utility.
Right.
If I could just add, you know, as a local legislator, if I were to sit and think like, oh, I better not do this because it might get preempted, I better not do that because it might get preempted, I wouldn't do anything.
Yeah.
So I have to continue down this path all the time, knowing that that's a possibility, but being aware that, you know, in the end, they're not going to be able to preempt local good governance as much as they might try, as long as we do our best.
Shelley, when you consider one of the main reasons that renewable energy alternatives are cheaper is because you take out the fuel. And in the way Florida utilities are regulated, fuel is a pass-through. And people will see this on the materials from their utilities about how they don't make profit off of the fuel. But when Florida Power and Light's parent company and one of Duke's subsidiaries own a pipeline, they are making money off the fuel costs. So it does color where, you know, how these plants are driven. Florida is between 75 and 90% fossil gas. So the perspective of the Clio Institute is that we owe it to our communities, and the city of Clearwater is doing it. And now the HERS committee in St. Petersburg and the committee of the whole have requested Mayor Welch to do an RFP for an analysis. We owe it to our communities to do the analysis to see what it would look like, because things are just different with the cost of solar being 90% cheaper and battery storage being available. But when you're a hammer, everything you see is a nail. So if you own a pipeline, and Duke is 90% fossil fuels, so whether it's the cost issue, the undergrounding issue, or you know, any of these things, or your clean energy is your goal, we owe it to the community to do that analysis.
Well, it's I'm aware that Duke obviously opposes this move, and they have suggested that the estimates by the new gen consultants for Clearwater of the costs of conversion, the costs of purchasing the infrastructure necessary from Duke to provide energy to the residents of Clearwater, the new gen consultants estimate somewhere over $500 million for that purchase, whereas Duke is saying it's going to be over $1 billion. That seems to me like kind of a bullying kind of tactic. I don't know whether or not that is supported at all, but basically they're saying, come and get us. We're not interested in selling it to you. And the city does have the legal power to try to take that infrastructure by eminent domain, but it also does give Duke due process rights to go to court and fight over how much the city would pay them for their infrastructure. That could take a long, long time to work its way through the courts and could be very expensive in terms of legal bills for the city of Clearwater. What about that?
I mean, I'll jump in and say, this is not unprecedented. Cities across the country have gone through this exact process. And I think a big part of what you're saying is understanding how feasible it is. And that's why we start with these feasibility studies. The studies look at cost and they look at legality as well. So I think in St. Petersburg, we haven't said as a city government, like, yes, it's better to move away from this. What we've said as a city government is it's worth investing in finding out if it's better. And history shows us that it has been better for these municipalities that have moved away. We already talked about Winter Park, but there's a lot of cities in the state that have municipally owned energy utilities, Jacksonville, Tallahassee, Gainesville, Orlando, Lakeland, and these utilities on average charge 20% less to their customers. And so this is definitely worth a path worth going down. And I don't want to, pull the wool over anybody's eyes or make them think it's all going to be easy and sunshine and rainbows. It's going to be a difficult process, but, you know, I was elected to do difficult things that would make my constituents' lives better. And that's why I'm going down this path.
Yeah, I think that there's a misconception that this is some like weird, wacky, you know, hippie idea to form a municipal utility. And that's not the case. Apparently, there's more than 2,000 community-owned electric utilities serving more than 48 million people in the United States. And it's not just in small communities like Clearwater or St. Pete, but large cities, including Los Angeles, San Antonio, Nashville, Orlando, and Seattle, they all have municipal electric utilities. And so it's not like some wacky hippie idea that...
And you see that in the report, by the way, that was part of the presentation there for Clearwater. You get to see all those public utilities and how all of them are lower, or almost all of them lower, than the investor-owned utilities.
You're taking the profit motive out. That is the underlying fundamental issue. And, you know, with the state legislature, Florida is only one of only four states in the nation that doesn't allow this any kind of sort of free market or competition. No one other than your government-assigned monopoly utility can sell you electricity. And so we get, you know, very stuck. I mentioned the every 5 years Florida sets conservation goals. Well, in Florida, the first thing we do is we deploy a 2-year payback screen. That means they eliminate all the cheap stuff. Anything that pays for itself in 2 years, they take off the table. Then they also deploy something called the rate impact measure. It is a cost-benefit test that only Florida uses. No other state uses it. That because energy efficiency, by definition, is going to impact rates. So what would pass the rate impact measure is if I came over to your house and took a sledgehammer to your wall and knocked a hole in it. Like, that would pass, right? So it's designed to, you know, just to not allow energy efficiency. The successful states, the lion's share of their programs is what Florida eliminates. So that layer of the Florida legislature, you know, is problematic. People in Duke territory can look on their electric bill and they will see a line item for an asset securitization charge. That is left over from one of the worst policies that was passed in 2006 to allow the utilities to charge in advance for new nuclear power plants, right? So people in Duke territory, I mean, it was billions of dollars taken from our community for absolutely nothing.
Yeah, they didn't even build it, right? They didn't even build it.
They've been taking all this money. That's right.
And the people have gotten literally nothing for it.
Yeah. In addition,
and the shareholders make money. Ongoing profit
That's
from
correct.
It, right?
Yeah. In addition to charging people to build new nuclear reactors, which never got built, they also did a steam generator uprate at Crystal River. They decided to do that in-house, and they cracked the 22-foot containment vessel in four places, and that went down. And same thing, Florida Power and Light, I won't get into the details, they did steam generator uprates that also caused problems for their plants with extra tube damage and so forth. So they do whatever they want to do, and they make a profit off of it. So we would take, if the city of St. Petersburg and the city of Clearwater ultimately decides, you will take the profit motive out of it.
So, you know, there are some good things about, to be fair, some good things about having Duke be the... you know, the sole energy generator for a community. Like, for example, they give a lot of money to community things, right? I think that the report said something like $150,000 or more to the city of St. Petersburg for different cultural and philanthropic efforts.
Clearwater.
For different cultural and philanthropic things. You know, how can we replace that, for example?
Well, Richie's going to say something. I've got something to add after him.
Go ahead.
This is an argument that I hear not just for, you know, municipal energy or whatever, but for corporations across the city all the time. Corporations are giving money so that we don't question them. That's just what it is. Like, they are like, oh, we're good community partners. Like, no, this came up with the baseball saga in St. Petersburg. This has come up with Duke. Like, their philanthropy is not just a gift. It's coming out of the profits that we pay them. And so... you know, that's the first point. The second point is municipally owned utilities as well do philanthropic efforts. If you go to, I was just in Orlando this past weekend at the UCF football game, and on the sideline they had Orlando Utility Company advertisements that they were paying the school. That's philanthropic efforts as well. And so these things won't go away, but we can't not question someone because they throw a pittance back at us with the profits that they take out of our community.
Well, and think about that. So a company like Duke, they get to do whatever they want without any question from their ratepayers at that donation. If you look back to the city of Clearwater, they have a gas company. And so there was a lot of analysis and pushback on the amount of donations that you want to talk about waste going out to all these different organizations. And they were way out of whack. And bringing it back into, that's ratepayer money. Ratepayer money that's going out to whoever's in charge of that specific, you know, part is making those decisions. And the city woke up and curtailed that to a large degree. So in a case of any city becoming a muni on the electricity side, they're going to have to go through that same analysis. That's ratepayer money. Just like... You know, I was comparing it the other day to, we don't have the city of St. Pete with their water utility, water and sewer, going out and being some, you know, trying to compete with Duke for donations out there in the community, right? And we would not be particularly happy with that if we had our ratepayer money going out of our control. Why isn't that money coming back to ratepayers?
Right. Well, that's the thing. I mean, right now, excess revenues you know, will go to shareholders in the form of profit, as opposed to staying in the local community and being invested in system improvements or return to the customer in the form of lower rates, right? I mean, it's kind of like the Hope Florida thing. You know, they're diverting public money to private political agendas, I guess. And here we have the opportunity, I guess, like you said, Richie, you know, they could use some excess revenue to do some philanthropic things if they wanted to do that.
Yeah. And the point is, to Brian's point as well, we get to choose. Your local community gets to choose how those funds are spent. Do we want to relieve ratepayers? Do we want to continue to sponsor things around our community? But that'll be a democratic choice instead of one made by executives in charge of a company.
Right.
Another issue that people throw up is what they call the franchise fee. And a decade ago, when the city of Tampa was renegotiating their franchise agreement with Tampa Electric, and that was before Tampa Electric sold to Emera, which is a Canadian company. And I remember Mayor Iorio saying that she needed this municipal franchise fee, and to which I would argue that the franchise fee is not something that grows on a tree somewhere. That is a tax that local government essentially through the utility. So it goes on the utility bill, and most people just don't even realize it's there. So everyone get out your Duke bill and look at your asset securitization charge and look at your municipal franchise fee. You could you could still charge your community that same tax, but be upfront about it. So the idea is there's money, and that's how in some cases, the investor-owned utilities kind of rope the leaders in because they have this, you know, franchise fee, which people, you know, the local governments get used to spending.
And Shelley, if I could just, I'm not sure that we're going to get to this, but I want to make sure we at least touch on it. With the franchise agreement, I hear people talk about, well, maybe if we don't go and create a muni, we can get a better franchise agreement.
I really want to get into that with the three of you. I don't want to lose the opportunity to talk about why isn't the better course to just renegotiate the franchise agreement with Duke now when you have the leverage of the contract expiring. I mean, Clearwater would have to obtain some benefits without going through all the difficulties that we heard that Winter Park went through to establish their municipal utility. Why isn't that the better course?
So I think people lose sight of that the state is in control of things here. It's not that the city of Clearwater is going to be able to do some rogue agreement that is going to be some fantastical, we're going to lower rates for you in the community. That's not going to happen through a renegotiation of a franchise.
Oh, why
agreement.
Not?
It's not legally allowed.
It's not. They can't do it. So
well, they can't do it because of state legislation?
It's controlled by the Public Service Commission in the state.
You mean rates?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. There's not that much you can negotiate. And at the city of Tampa a decade ago, I said you should negotiate a right of refusal to buy the utility if it were to be sold. And one of the things that the mayor, who's now on Tampa Electric's board, refused to do was that. And, you know, sometimes you hate to be right. Tampa Electric was the utility most likely to sell, and they did sell to Emera. And the city of Tampa had an opportunity at that juncture. But the Public Service Commission is the one who sets rates, so you're not going to be able to change that. The only kinds of things you can navigate might be the right to wheel power in the system, like if you had a big solar array somewhere. But you're not going to be able to change those rates. And I'll just mention, between 21 and 2023, Tampa Electric's rates went up 63%, Duke's went up 31%, Florida Power and Light in their traditional territory went up 51%, and they own what used to be called Gulf Power in the Panhandle. Those rates went up 64%. And now with Florida Power and Light, then they came in with $1.2 billion, which was a similar number to Duke's for storm costs. And now they were asking for $10 billion. They're in a settlement for $7 billion with industrial users, and the public council is not even in that negotiation. The Office of Public Counsel said that Florida Power and Light should get about $107 million, and they're asking for $10 billion. They're now down to $7 billion. That's what you're looking at.
And to illustrate the point further, back to an example like Clearwater, in nothing that Susan mentioned there is that, well, one, we're going to have one rate for one city within that territory for FPL and another rate for somebody else. That's not the way that that stuff gets set. It's for their entire territory.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people are under a misconception about the Public Service Commission because it has the word public in it, that somehow it works for and represents the public in Florida. And I think it's pretty clear that that's not the case, right? Even the public advocate or public counsel, like you said, doesn't have the juice, doesn't have the power to be able to protect the residents of Florida from some of these outrageous rate increases.
A lot of the people, first off, who appoints the Public Service Commission?
Right.
Anybody want to?
The governor.
Okay. And, you know, first, the investor-owned utilities make a lot of political contributions.
Yep.
And the people on the Public Service Commission are... a lot of them former executives of the investor-owned utilities. And so it's an incestuous relationship. There's no real regulation going on. It's them trying to feel out the public and see how much they can fleece us for. And that's the case in a lot of government and a lot of situations like this. And so for us to just say we're not going to investigate a different possibility, a different path going forward, different possibilities, and instead try to negotiate with these investor-owned utilities when the people who are regulating them are completely in their pocket, that's nonsensical.
So if I understand you correctly, the answer to my question, which really is kind of the fundamental question in this issue of whether or not Clearwater or St. Pete, for that matter, should form a municipal utility... the fundamental question is why not use the leverage of the contract expiring now to renegotiate better rates? And if I understand you correctly, it can't
you
be
can't
done.
You can't do that.
It can't be done.
It's literally,
right?
it's not possible.
It's not possible.
Shelley, though, let me tell you, municipal utilities, it's not a perfect situation. In fact, the Clio Institute, we just contracted with RMI, which is known as the Rocky Mountain Institute, for a rigorous analysis on the Jacksonville's utility, which has a proposal to build a gas plant. And this analysis shows that just the difference in the numbers from 2023, when they did their integrated plan, to 2025, is the costs have gone up 139%. So a renewables only, or what RMI calls a clean energy portfolio, would literally be $2.5 billion less. And the plant is going to have another billion in health impacts in Duval County and $2 billion in the state. Like, the costs are exponentially higher to do gas, but the Jacksonville utility, at least their board, wants to move forward with that. So we're, you know, bringing this information to the table. Same thing with Orlando. In 2020, when they did their integrated plan, they locked in 20 years of gas. They hired Siemens, who sells gas infrastructure, to be their consultant. They downplayed the energy efficiency potential. They ignored
Let me stop you because we're in the weeds about this. How much control would the Clearwater proposed municipal utility have over where and how they get their power? How much control would they have? I mean, they have to buy what's available. And, you know... right now, what's available is pretty polluting technology, right? I mean, we don't want to gaslight people into thinking that, you know, they form a municipal electric utility and the next thing you know, everybody has solar panels on their roof and, you know, we have clean energy only and you know, the pollution effects are enormously diminished. I mean, they can only buy the energy that's out there, and we don't want people to not get their electricity because... They can't buy clean energy.
Yeah, Richie can elaborate on this, but if St. Petersburg were to form their own municipal utility, they could do solar on roofs. They could do battery storage in neighborhoods and create microgrids. So that's up to them. But
it's also up to the people, the residents, right?
True, absolutely.
You know, they may or they may not want to you know, engage in that. There, you know, people may say, I don't want to have to deal with the upkeep of solar panels on my roof, or I just put a new roof in and I'm worried that, you know, that the structure of what you want me to put on my roof is going to hurt my roof and cause leaks or whatever. There's a million, you know, people are unique and they're all going to have their issues. And, you know, I'm not sure that we could get 100% buy-in from people who all need electricity.
I think, yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think this is an important conversation in that, you know, what I started from, like, a municipal utility is not going to be perfect. It's not going to be a utopia or anything. But what it will be is it will take us from a situation right now, when it comes to energy generation, renewables and whatnot, it'll take us from our situation right now, which is we have no control over where energy comes from at all. Residents of St. Petersburg, the local government, we have no control. You know, the city of St. Petersburg signed a memorandum of understanding with Duke to talk about this kind of thing. We signed up with their clean energy connections program. And all of those things have fallen through. We haven't gotten what the initial projections were. Because we have no control. If we were to move to a municipal utility, we would have control. We would be able to use our market purchase power to go out and say to energy providers, we want to buy this kind of mix of energy. We want to buy energy from this company and not this company. You can purchase energy out on the open market. We can't do that at all right now. And so will we be able to instantly convert to renewables? No, probably not, because, you know, we have to generate the electricity and we can't generate it all in St. Petersburg. Rooftop right. solar is minuscule compared right. to utility scale solar, and we can't do that. We have a built out urban environment.
Right.
So, but what we can do is we can go out and purchase it and we can have more control than we have right now, which is absolutely none.
You can also help people become more efficient. You can reduce your energy bill by up to a third with a high efficiency AC. So we can provide financing opportunities. The city could buy down the interest rate. I mean, you can put microgrids in neighborhoods. And solar can also go on big buildings as well. You know, Orlando, which again is a much frustration to me, did a study. The National Renewable Energy Lab said they could get, you know, 600 plus megawatts on rooftops, and then they ignored it, right? So there's a lot of opportunity there, but you start with the efficiency. Insulation, I'd be sending, if I'm king for the day, I'm sending out insulation trucks to go into the roofs older housing stock.
I've got a call here from Bill. I'm going to take a quick call. Bill, please be quick. You're on the air.
Hi, I love your show. Thank you. I understand and I wholeheartedly agree with both sides of what you're saying. But the only thing from my point of view is that this time last year, I had no electricity for 5 days. It was a living hell. Honest to goodness, I didn't know what to do. The only reason why I can hear your show now is that I have electricity. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we could go back and forth about who's paying what and what's this. The bottom line is we need power. And that's it.
Okay.
One way or the other. We have to get it. I mean, that's it. So I don't know. And, you know, the bottom line is this, is that we're going to have to pay for it because no one handed me a bill when they restored my power. My power was restored by South Carolina Electric. They didn't say, okay, here's your bill. Now you can have electricity. Thank goodness I finally got electricity after 5 days because I was losing.
Hey, Bill, I'm sympathetic. I was out of power for 9 days last year, so I know exactly what you mean. All right, thanks for calling in. Let me turn to our guests and talk about that a little bit. So Bill's concerned about getting the assistance from these other investor-owned utility companies that send their trucks in and, you know, when we have a disaster like we had last year and we had power outages and we had trucks and repair people from all over the country come to Florida.
And they'll have the same arrangements, just like the Jacksonville utility, Orlando, Tallahassee, just like you said, Richie, there's a lot of munis. It's very common.
They wouldn't boycott Clearwater?
No. No, doesn't work like that.
No, because when you enter into municipal utility, the municipal utilities all band together and send their linemen to different areas based off of storms, the same way the investor-owned utilities do. And so there's a network just the same. It would be the exact same outcome. But I appreciate exactly like, you know, when we go to study this issue, reliability and restorability yeah. will be at the top of our minds. Well, we live in Florida. We know what the outcomes
right.
can
well,
be.
Well, one of the advantages, as the Winter Park City Manager pointed out in that report, which we thank Tampa Bay 28 for doing that report and putting it on. One of the reliability issues was that over 80% of their lines were undergrounded. And I know that there are projects now from our investor-owned utilities to underground lines because it costs them a lot, too, when we have these big power failures.
Well, they like to underground. Undergrounding is very expensive. And in 2019, the Florida legislature essentially rubber-stamped the utilities to be able to underground anywhere they want.
Well, and the thing is that when they do those infrastructure projects right now, they get a guaranteed rate of return of about 10%. So the cost is always passed on to the consumer, and it means they're incentivized to charge as much as possible for those.
Yeah, Duke has extra mm-hmm. charges now from
that's
the,
right.
That
and they
more
get
than a billion.
You heard
dollars.
Me say that we're going to drop off in March of 2026, supposedly, to cover the cost.
If we don't have yet another storm yeah. and another storm charges, which they pass through to the customers. One thing, just to Bill's comment, is that if you have your own utility and you have more latitude to do battery storage, whether it's on homes. And again, the utility, a municipal utility, could own the solar. You mentioned keeping up with it and just put it on your roof. But they could also put battery storage on individual buildings and then microgrids in neighborhoods, which is just batteries.
Let me say one quick thing to Bill as well. Bill, I think we've spoken about this before, actually. I think you don't live too far from me, and Duke's been doing undergrounding in our area recently, so hopefully that comes to you soon. If you want an update on how it's going to go, you can reach out to my office. I can send you that info.
Okay. All right. Well, we thank you for your call, Bill, and I certainly understand where you're coming from. Like I said, I was 9 days without power in the last hurricane go-round, the Stormapalooza of the double storm. So I do understand that. All right. We don't have too much time left today. I want to make sure that if you have additional questions about this issue of the formation of a municipal utility, that you can get the information you need. So I am going to post on the WMNF Midpoint blog page a number of documents that I received from a very helpful person in Clearwater. Lisa, thank you so much for your help with this prepping for this show. I'm going to post the New Gen report and some other documents so you can review it for yourself. Brian, if people want to know more about what the Sierra Club feels about this proposal, where do they go?
Yeah, so our website is sierraclub.org/Florida/Suncoast.
Okay, is there anything particular about this issue on the website?
We've got some. We've got a lot around our solar projects and things like that.
Okay.
That is fascinating to see.
And Susan, what about you? Where can people find the Clio Institute?
Yeah, clioinstitute.org. And our objective is climate literacy, so people need to understand that by these utilities burning fossil fuels, they're increasing the problem of more intense storms. And we are very, you know, fossil fuel oriented there. So we need to get informed.
Okay. And Richie, how about you?
So, you know, I'm an elected official. You can reach out to my office anytime with questions. We love to get back to our constituents. And if you want to learn more about the activism around this issue, it's you can go to dumpdukestpete.com. It's STPETE, dumpdukestpete.com.
Okay. So that's pretty much all we have time for today, friends. So I want to thank you for being with us. I also want to thank my guests, Brian Beckman of the Sierra Club, climate advocate Susan Glickman from the Clio Institute, and St. Pete City Council member Richard Richie Floyd. Thanks also to our WMNF operations volunteers, my producer Jessica Green on the soundboard and Barbara Fling on the phones. Point of personal privilege, I'll be taking a sabbatical from Midpoint in mid-November, and we'll have some great substitute hosts for you, bringing in some public affairs topics that they are passionate about. But until then, tune in next week, October 29th, for Public Radio Music Day. As you know, funding has been cut and all public media is under attack. Music too. And here at WMNF, we think selecting music is a free speech issue. So how can we preserve our exposure to the diversity and eclectic musical programming that you get at WMNF in a world of consolidated media and algorithms? We will be talking about all things public radio brings to you with some special WMNF guests from the music side of the house next week on Midpoint. So stick with us. Talking Animals is up next with Duncan after the NPR News. We are WMNF Tampa, and we are out.